Welcome to the weekly podcast from the Church of England. In this week's programme, the Bishop of Manchester, David Walker, talks about Homeless Sunday. The Dean of Ely Cathedral, the Very Reverend Mark Bonney, speaks about the new app available from the cathedral. And the Reverend Andrea Jones talks about the Greater Manchester Winter Night Shelter. But first, the Reverend Canon Jeremy Worthen, Secretary for Ecumenical Relations and Theology at the Council for Christian Unity, talks to us about the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity.
It's not a new idea. It's been around for quite a while, actually, probably over a century. But the idea of setting aside time to pray for Christian unity has proved to be one that's had a kind of enduring appeal. It's worldwide. Christians all over the world will be doing this, and from all kinds of groups and denominations and churches. It's organised by the World Council of Churches and the Roman Catholic Church, working together to produce resources each year that are based in a particular country. So each year a particular country undertakes to work together, Christians in that country work together, to prepare material that can then be used and adapted around the world. This year the material's coming from Latvia. So it really is a global thing, and the World Council of Churches and the Roman Catholic Church between them encompass the great majority of Christians globally. So it's about joining in with something that's got quite a long history and that has a global reach, setting aside time to pray for Christian unity.
How can people practically get involved with this initiative?
There's different ways to get involved. There's probably something going on reasonably near you, a designated event. I know I've been invited to speak in Canterbury on Sunday, one of the churches near me where I live. And many places, many towns, cities, villages will be putting something on to bring together Christians from different denominations to come together, a special service or a special event, prayer walk, something like that, in order to come together and pray together, perhaps with a particular focus. Some people will be focusing on, for instance, praying for refugees and migrants, or praying for the situation of the environment. So you can do that. Find out what's going on. There's a good website organised by churches together in Britain and Ireland called weekofprayer.org, which has a Twitter wall with different things that are going on. So you can have a look there if you're not really sure. I think it's something we can also do in our own parishes and churches up and down the country. Particularly this Sunday, we can think about making Christian unity a focus for our intercessions, our prayers, something that we might talk about in the sermon, might be a focus for preaching it. And finally, it's just, I think, down to each one of us in our prayers this week, our prayers day by day, just to try and set aside particular time to focus on Christian unity as something that matters, something that we care about, that we know God cares about, and holding that in our prayers at this time.
What does Christian unity look like?
That's a really good question, and I guess it looks like different things in different contexts. The recent document from the World Council of Churches talked about the church as a community of worship, of witness, and of discipleship. And I think Christian unity looks like Christians coming together in worship. And many of us will have fantastic experiences of worshiping with, you know, great numbers of Christians from all kinds of churches, and that kind of glimpse of heaven, of every tribe, nation and language coming together to praise God in worship. It's about Christians coming together in witness. It's about Christians witnessing together to the good news of the Lord Jesus Christ through what they say and through what they do, through practical action that shows love and compassion and a concern for justice. And it's about coming together in discipleship. It's about trying to learn together, to study the Bible together, to enrich one another through sharing our traditions. So I think Christian unity can look like all those kind of things. And of course, Christian unity is most full and most rich when it somehow weaves those things together. It brings Christians together in worship, in witness, and in discipleship. And I think that's when we see something of the beauty and the glory of God's church.
How can people find out more about what's going on and joining with others across the world as they pray?
As I said, there's a good website that I mentioned, and you can look at Churches Together in Britain and Ireland website, which organises the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity in this country. And the World Council of Churches website also has material. I should have said, actually, that although most churches in the Northern Hemisphere, most countries in the Northern Hemisphere, keep the week from the 18th to the 25th of January each year. Other churches keep it in different ways. You can follow what's happening on Twitter. There's a hashtag, hashtag WPCU2016, and you can look at that and see what's going on. I mean, and it's really great to do that because you get a real sense of it being a global initiative. It's not just about what's happening in England. It's not just about what may be happening in a church near you. It's something that Christians are marking and getting involved with all around the world.
Homeless Sunday is taking place this Sunday, the 24th of January. Chris Lamarquand spoke to Bishop David Walker, asking him questions about his involvement in housing and the purpose behind the day.
Well, it started when I was appointed in the mid-1980s as team vicar in a mining parish at a point when the coal board were selling off most of their tenanted dwellings. Some of them were being sold to private speculators, and I kept hearing horror stories from my parishioners. I'd be going round to arrange a funeral or a baptism or a wedding, and I'd hear these tales about their fear of the landlords who were coming in and taking over their properties and how badly some of those were then being maintained. And I thought there had to be a better way. And it was an example for me of how we start as clergy with the pastoral, but then you can't avoid having to make more systematic and perhaps even political responses to situations.
Homeless Sunday takes place on Sunday, the 24th of January. What's the purpose of that day?
Well, we've been running Homelessness Sunday for quite a few years now, and the purpose is simply to highlight issues around homelessness. Back again when I was a parish priest, we had a number of projects running to combat homelessness in the town where I was working. We had a scheme to enable young unemployed people to access private sector rented accommodation, as well as working with housing associations and getting people to build their own homes. And it was a fillip to us to have a particular Sunday of the year that kind of celebrated the work that we were doing, drew it to the attention of the wider church, and gave us an opportunity to know that we were being held in prayer by people who weren't as perhaps actively involved as we were in our particular parish.
And what are the particular challenges facing the homeless? I mean, some of them will be obvious, but you know, some of them might not so be.
And the most visible sign of homelessness, and certainly in Manchester city centre, which I am regularly walking through, is people who are sleeping rough on the streets. But they're often just the tip of the iceberg. They're those who've got the most complex needs, often a mixture of relationship breakdown, mental health issues, and then often that leads to reliance on alcohol or drugs, particularly to dull some of the pain of being on the streets 24 hours a day. That's the visible sign of homelessness, and I think the churches are very, very good at rallying around that. And indeed, in Manchester, just a couple of weeks ago, we've launched a new scheme, 7 churches, each taking one night a week, and effectively being a rolling winter night shelter where homeless people can come along, have something to eat, have a good night's sleep, have a decent breakfast, and have conversation with church people. And what I've been hearing on the feedback from that already is just how much the volunteers, who were quite nervous initially at getting involved, just how much they're getting out of it, how much they're being enriched by the conversations they're having with people who are homeless. So that's the very visible side of it. But a lot of work around homelessness is about preventing people becoming homeless. And I think for churches, it is about seeing that people don't just have 4 walls and the roof over their heads, but they're actually in a community where they can be respected, where they've got safety, security, where their needs for worship, for the education of their children, access to employment and for leisure facilities, all of those can be met. A home is much more than simply a physical thing of bricks and mortar. And so for the churches, it's looking at who has got the least choices and who is being denied some of what goes up to make a home in the fullest sense of the word.
And you talked a little bit about homeless shelters there. What are the other ways that churches can maybe help aside from that?
Yes, well, a number of things I've seen churches do over the years. In particular, it's work with the homeless, helping people who've become very much marginalised by the experience of homelessness to move back towards the mainstream of society. One of our projects in Manchester, originally based in the cathedral, though it recently moved into bigger premises, actually teaches people to sing in a small choir, and simply having to manage the social interactions necessary to do that, and then to be able to deliver something that an audience come and pay and watch and enjoy, go some steps towards helping someone who's been very marginalised begin to reintegrate again. Because for those who have ended up on the streets, it's quite a lot of small steps that you need to get back into ordinary life. It's quite an easy journey to end up on the streets. People manage that very quickly, but it can take years to get back off the streets, fully integrated into society. So the work of volunteers in getting alongside, befriending, just sitting with and talking to or helping to learn to sing, those sorts of things with people who are homeless, I think that's very important. The other thing, I guess I would say, because I've always had that combination of the kind of what you might call the pastoral and then the small p political, is about how we organise our society in ways that don't unduly work against those who've got the least choices with regard to housing. And so I do have concerns, which I've reiterated again and again, about the impacts of changes in benefits that drive people away from living in the communities where they're known and loved and trusted, that drive them to live a long way from where their support networks are, perhaps because it's cheaper in the short run for the benefit bill, but often it's more expensive for society in the longer run, because take people away from their support systems and they're more likely to have to rely on paid support or other formal interventions from social services and others. So it's about seeing that those who are in the most need have their rights respected and their plight is always kept at the forefront of our minds.
Ely Cathedral has launched an app available to download on Android, iOS and Windows devices that gives a virtual tour of the cathedral and its grounds. The Very Reverend Mark Bonney, Dean of Ely Cathedral, spoke to Ben Holliburn about the reasons for producing the app.
We thought it was important to develop the app as one of the many things that we're trying to do to enhance the visitor experience for people coming here and to make the cathedral more accessible to people. And also realising that many places that people go to, this is a modernising aspect of things and wanting to be part of that to show that we have a wide appeal to people.
What does the app do and who exactly is it for?
The app is easily downloadable and it has four trails on the app. There's one that takes you around the inside of the cathedral. There's one that takes you what we call a monastic trail, which goes around the outside of the building. We have the largest number of inhabited medieval monastic buildings of any cathedral, I think, and they're sort of particularly interesting because you can't get into them, but the trail can show you something about them. One of the trails is particularly geared towards children, and there's another trail that looks at some lovely high-up carvings we have that tell the story of our local saint, Saint Etheldreda. But you can't really see them very well from the ground level, but the app shows you those and tells you her story. And the app has some really high-quality pictures of various parts of the cathedral and around and tells you some of its history. And you can then sort of go down another level and it'll tell you a little more detail about something and often has some spiritual reflection alongside that as well. So it's aimed at quite a wide range of people as well. And they can use it before they get here and download it and to sort of prepare for a visit here. And also they could use it while they were here as well, or as preparation for coming, where we have a large number of very experienced and knowledgeable floor guides, for whom we don't charge, I should add, and they can take part in that as well.
Do you think the app will enable people who wouldn't necessarily visit the cathedral to engage with you and perhaps also visit?
I think we really hope that that will be the case. And you might wonder whether you want to go there. I've never been to Ely before. You can download the app and you get a really good idea of what a splendid place it is and what there is to see. And it'll whet the appetite for what is here. As we want to encourage people to come here and visit and worship and see the place for itself.
Would you encourage other cathedrals and churches to do similar or the same thing?
Absolutely. I think one or two cathedrals have started down this line, but not many. I think there's something at Norwich, and there might be one at York. And we've used the great, greatly helped by the people from York University who developed this. York University's Department for Christianity and Culture have helped us develop this, and we've been hugely grateful to the Friends of the Cathedral who funded it, because it's not cheap initially, but it does sort of open up lots of different avenues.
Have you got any plans for any future app releases or other things kind of on a mobile device?
Not immediately on a mobile device, though. The way it is done, it is easily updatable. You know, if something changes or we put in something else, we can update the app, as I understand it. We are looking at having something more in the cathedral alongside using what's called digital modelling, which we're in the process of developing again with York University's Department for Christianity and Culture. And the digital modelling is an interactive screen where you can see how the building has grown and developed and changed, not least, for example, where we have our wonderful octagon space, and the lantern was a result of the collapse of the central tower in the 14th century. But something like the digital modelling would be able to show you what the cathedral looked like and how the monastic choir was before all that collapsed, and how different stages of the building grew and developed, and engage with that as well. So we're looking at that as something more on-site than off-site.
Finally this week, the Reverend Andrea Jones, who is involved in setting up the Greater Manchester Winter Night Shelter, speaks about the planning behind the initiative as they open their doors in the first week.
Well, this is our first week, but we are... it's been in the planning stage since last autumn. We had hoped to have it running before now, so it's taken us a bit of time to get it sorted. We're also reliant, obviously, on getting a volunteer base together, and we have had some funding from the Church Urban Fund to help us get equipment like the beds, and also we've got someone who's employed to help us get volunteers, because it's not just members of our congregation who are obviously doing sleepovers and breakfasts, but we've got people joining us as volunteers from across the diocese.
You mentioned their breakfasts, but I understand that you also do... an evening meal. Could you explain a bit about kind of the hospitality that you provide?
Yeah, we hope very much that this project is about hospitality, about us being able to share things with our guests, and so we provide a meal in the evening, which we all eat together, and then in the morning we provide some breakfast, and again we sit down and eat it together. So that's an important part of us getting to know each other. We are expecting that some people will be the same people for several weeks coming to the shelter, going to different churches each night. But we already know that last week somebody who was with us has actually got somewhere better to stay this week, somewhere more permanent, which is absolutely brilliant. So we're expecting that we'll have a new guest. So whilst we'll get to know people, it will actually be quite good if we don't get to know them that well, and that they can find somewhere more permanent and stable to stay rather than having to use the shelter.
In terms of how you meet and begin to kind of support the people that that come and stay with you, how does that work?
The shelter is working in conjunction with a project in Manchester called the Booth Centre. So they are referring people to us. So people will join us in the evening with a referral letter, and they will stay with us then overnight. We are hoping that working with the Booth Centre, who do have really excellent services to help people try and get better accommodation, training, get people with problems maybe around addiction, will be able to get help. We're hoping working with them that they will be able to refer people. But one of the things that we're very conscious of being involved in this project, and certainly as Homelessness Sunday is with us on Sunday, is actually what we're doing here is really a sticking plaster. You know, homelessness is a huge problem in a city like Manchester, and you know, Christians are very good at racing in when there is a problem and helping. It's important that we do that, and we're really keen on what we're doing here. But there are other issues. You know, it's that old adage, isn't it, that, you know, Christians are very good if they see someone drowning in a stream, they rush out and save them. Next day they rush out and save someone else, but somebody's throwing those people in the stream further up. Who is, you know, how is it that we live in this rich society where there are still so many homeless people? There are difficult questions that need to be asked as a society, and I hope as Christians that Homelessness Sunday does help us reflect on those issues of why we have people who are homeless. The reasons are diverse and complicated, and, you know, people have often got into very difficult situations. But nevertheless, I think it's quite shameful that in the society as rich as ours, we have so many people who are in this situation on the streets in Manchester. On this last week's been very, very cold. Family breakdown is a big issue. You can speak to somebody. There is, you know, who in the past has had a job, has had a stable relationship. This project is only for men because we didn't have the ability to have a mixed project, and we understand that from the Booth Centre that there are more men sleeping on the streets than women, and a lot of are facing family breakdown, and, you know, there, but for the grace of God, go all of us, really, because, you know, it's not very far to fall if you end up losing your family and then your job, and then you can't get a deposit or rent. And so listening to people whose stories, it's just people like you and me. It's not a different class of people, just people who've actually found life spiralling out of control. I think we're still looking very much for people to join this project. It's quite labour-intensive in terms of volunteers. We do need people who are willing to stay overnight every night. Some of that involves staying awake, because volunteers have to stay awake, not all night, but in shifts. There is information on the Manchester Diocese website about how you can get involved. It really is great fun. I've had lots of laughs at the night shelter, lots of sense of humour, lots of pulling each other's legs. And, you know, if people want to get involved, then certainly we'd be grateful for that. Also to find out more about it, because this is a model that's not just happening in Manchester. There are other cities. I know it happens in Birmingham, an organisation called Housing Justice. It's very much on their model. But it could be something that could be useful elsewhere if people want to find out more about it.
That's it for this week's podcast. Thanks for listening.